Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for April 29th, 2025. It's Tuesday. We start with campus shooting suspect sought. One person hurt in isolated incident at student center by Catherine Klepek. Police appealed to the public on Monday for help in identifying the suspect in a shooting on the Illinois State University campus that left one person injured. Officers responded around 7:40 p.m. Sunday for a report of shots fired at the Bone Student Center. Police said the shooting was an isolated incident that occurred after a fight broke out between two groups of people. One person was struck by gunfire and taken to an area hospital with injuries that were not considered life-threatening. The shooting victim was not an ISU student, the university said. Speaking to the Pantograph at the scene on Sunday night, sophomore Thomas Fox said he was outside of the Bone Student Center when the incident took place. He didn't hear shots, but saw 50 to 100 people exit in a hurry, he said. Everybody was stacking out of there. On Monday, ISU released two photos of a man who police described as a person of interest. He fled the area after the shooting, ISU police said. In the photos, he appears to be a young black man in his late teens or early 20s, with short dark hair and minimal facial hair, wearing a black hoodie and a backpack. In a statement from the university issued about 4.5 hours after the reported shooting, the person suspected in the shooting was described as a slender black male, about 5'10" with black Afro-style hair, wearing all black clothing. He was last seen running south from the Bone Student Center, the university said. The university statement said ISU was grateful for assistance from other agencies who responded Sunday, including the Normal and Bloomington Police Departments, McLean County Sheriff's Office, Illinois State Police, and the Normal Fire Department. Dozens of officers worked through the night processing evidence, responding to calls and tips, and providing an extra presence on campus, the release stated. Anyone with information is asked to contact ISU Police at isupolice@illinoisstate.edu or at 309-438-8631. Next, we have lane reductions planned in Normal. Repairs to be completed by Friday afternoon by Matus Janik. Beginning at 4 a.m. Tuesday, there will be a lane reduction on Towanda Avenue between Robb Road and the bridge for crack seal work. The lane reduction is expected to be completed by 3 p.m. Friday, weather permitting. A map highlighting the lane reduction can be found online at arcg.is/1XUCFY2. Call Dan Wallum at 309-454-9738 with any further questions. Starting at 5 a.m. on Tuesday, there will be a lane reduction on West Hovey Avenue between Cottage Avenue and South Adelaide Street for pavement repairs. That lane reduction will be reopened each day at 3 p.m. and is expected to be completed by 1 p.m. on Thursday, weather permitting. Call Public Works Supervisor Eric Murphy at 309-454-9638 with further questions. As always, drivers are urged to use caution when traveling through both areas. Drew Zimmerman writes, winners of Act So program honored. Competitors are paired with mentors for guidance. For the last 15 years, the Bloomington Normal NAACP's Afro-Academic, Cultural, Technological, and Scientific Olympics program has helped dozens of high school students learn essential life skills and find career paths. However, this year's ceremony, which was held Sunday at the DoubleTree Hotel, wasn't just a chance to acknowledge the 7 students who went through the program during the 24-25 school year. Event organizers also took the chance to thank the community leaders that helped to create and grow Act So in McLean County. Paige White, co-chair of the Act So Steering Committee's Bloomington Normal Chapter, said the program has served as a platform for students to thrive and flourish. This is a program where students get to stretch themselves, they get to self-discover, and they become confident in some of the areas that they compete in, White said. Act So is a roughly 8-month program in which students can choose one of 32 competitive fields, ranging from STEM-related categories to dance, poetry, filmmaking, photography, sculpture, entrepreneurship, and culinary arts. Once they have chosen the area or areas they'd like to compete in, they are paired with a mentor to help guide them toward a final presentation or performance at the end of the 8 months. Act So steering committee chairs and local volunteers will then meet with students each month to hone essential skills such as public speaking and presentation design. In the past, Illinois State University English professors have been brought in to help students with their writing skills, while local news anchors have aided students with their presentations and storytelling abilities. At the end of the program, participants give a final presentation or performance that is graded on a 1 to 100 scale. Bronze medals are awarded for scores between 85 and 89, silver medals are awarded for scores between 90 and 94, and gold medals are awarded for scores 95 and up. The ceremony's featured speaker was Ania Thompson, a former McLean County Unit 5 student who participated in the Act So program in contemporary music and dramatic arts for 3 years. After 2 unsuccessful attempts at medaling at the national level, Thompson won gold in a contemporary music category in 2021. In doing so, she earned a scholarship and an iPad. More importantly than any prize were the lessons that Act So gave me. How to persevere even when things didn't go my way. How to take feedback not as criticism but as fuel for growth. How to stay rooted in my passion and never let discouragement define me, Thompson said. This year, 2 participants were awarded gold medals and will now compete in the national Act So competition in Charlotte, North Carolina. Fekadu Rogal, a junior at Salam Global Academy Homeschool, won a gold medal in the Music Instrumental Contemporary category, while Mamush Rogal, a senior at Salam Global Academy Homeschool, won gold in the Music Instrumental Instrumental Classical category. Gabrielle Desiree Johnson, a junior at Normal West High School, earned a silver medal in music competition, and Giselle Barbara Lee, a sophomore at University High School, won silver in contemporary dance. Urijah Anderson, a sophomore at Bloomington High School, won bronze in contemporary vocal music. What keeps us going is just the passion that we have for seeing this kid succeed, White said. In addition to the medalists, special recognition was also given to Valerie Wyatt, who launched an Act So program in McLean County 15 years ago after serving as an enrichment chair in DuPage County, and Carol De La Cruz, who helped carry the torch following White's departure. I'm so proud to see students continue to shine, Wyatt said. Former Olympians of the program were also featured in a slideshow highlighting the Act So's program impact on each of their lives. Caitlin Klepek writes, Showcasing Self-Prophecy, longtime Pantograph photo editor to debut Art Center exhibit. Longtime Pantograph photo editor David Prober is showcasing his new fine art photography exhibit next month, putting the spotlight on the role of women in religion. I believe there is a necessity for women to express their religious identity and explore the possibility that their quality of life can be shared through self-prophecy, Prober wrote in his artist statement for his latest project, Visions, Cures, Blessings. His 21-photo exhibit for Visions, Curses, Blessings will be on display from May 2nd to June 6th at the McLean County Arts Center at 601 North East Street in Bloomington. Prober will host a reception and book launch from 5 to 7 p.m. May 2nd in the Armstrong Gallery at the Arts Center. In his book of the same name, Prober features 78 photographs along with his interpretive writings in the first edition's 136 pages. The book, which he self-published under Prober Fine Art LLC in Bloomington, is available for purchase on his website, prober-fineart.com. Although production for this exhibit began last year, the photographer, who retired from the Pantograph in 2022, said this project has been in the works for 20 years. Taking inspiration from the Bible, Prober said he became fascinated with making fine art photography and finding common ground to link the ancient stories from the Bible to current social, cultural, and political issues. Essentially, this work was begun just kind of looking at various chapters in the Bible and looking for inspiration in terms of the visionary sort of thing, Prober told the Pantograph in a recent interview. His first collection, based on the idea Song of Solomon, debuted in the 1990s and early 2000s, he said. Then, around 2004, Prober started planning for Visions, Curses, Blessings after he exhibited Deconstructed Man after Song of Solomon at the Herb Eaton Studio Gallery in Bloomington. This new collection is based on the Book of Isaiah, which was written primarily during the 8th century BC. Prober's photos tell the story of a mythical prophet named Issa, who, like the Hebrew prophet Isaiah, is employed in the royal court by the kings in her land, according to Prober's artist statement. The Book of Isaiah explores the failure of leadership to bring about justice for the people. I thought that was a really interesting topic that I could really explore, he said. The images featured in both the exhibit and his book started as sketches, Prober said, noting he has carried around a sketchbook for almost 20 years. Before picking up his camera, he sketched ideas for what the photographs would look like, drawing inspiration from Scripture. The final versions of the photographs in Visions, Curses, Blessings consist of about 4 layers featuring manipulated photography to add different textures to the photographs. While reading the Book of Isaiah and researching the leadership of that time, Prober said he learned more of Israel's story and how the Babylonians overcame the land and took its people into captivity. As I began to do more research, it occurred to me that one of the problems that Israel had at the time is that they really failed to make friends with their neighbors, he said. That issue about the stranger and being friends with your neighbor really caught my eye because it was the basis for, I think, a lot of the problems that have occurred in Israel with regard to their problems with the Palestinians. Prober said Visions, Curses, Blessings is relevant to the events of today, given the ongoing Israel-Hamas war, though he noted he didn't plan on it being relevant to the United States. I wanted to create a mythical world that was sort of a correlation with Isaiah's time. But what would happen if Isaiah had been a woman? And what if the vast majority of women in Israel at the time, or even here in the United States, had the ability to express their voice and be in contact with God, the artist said. Prober became involved with the McLean County Arts Center through his work at the Pantograph, where he spent 30 years capturing history in real time. In 2004, the Arts Center featured Prober's The Art of the News, an exhibit that showcased his work as a photojournalist in 3 galleries. After he retired, the Arts Center staff reached out to him asking if he had any work he could put on for his show. He then started working to find models so he could tell Issa's story. Prober said the models he found were mostly women he knew through fellow members of the Church of Christ uniting in Lexington, where his wife, the Reverend Jan Prober, is the pastor. They helped him to showcase the relationship between ourselves and the future through the expression of self-prophecy, according to the description on Prober's website. Visions, Curses, Blessings is a dialogue between the characters shown in the photographs and their God as they consider the call for welcoming the stranger. Although his initial proposal for the project was different from the end result, Prober said the finished work is deeper and more specific than the original plan. as a basis, if people could welcome a stranger at the very least and maybe begin to understand the rest of the work for what it stands, I think we would have a great dialogue going on between the artwork and people who come to see the work. Well, Visions, Curses, Blessings is on display in the Armstrong Gallery. The McLean County Arts Center will also feature Bloomington sculptor Dan Nardi and glass painter Michelle Rial in the other two galleries. Nardi's Remnants will be featured in the Brandt Gallery, while Rial's Naturally Glass will be in the Dolan Gallery. Friday, May 2nd will serve as opening night for all three artists. Food and drinks will be provided, and for more information, visit mcac.wildapricot.org. Adriana Perez from the Chicago Tribune contributes, disease found in area wildlife. Rabbit, squirrel test positive for tularemia. A dead rabbit found in central Illinois has tested positive for a bacterial disease, prompting the local health department to urge residents to monitor their families and pets for signs of the illness. The rabbit, infected with tularemia, was found in the Douglas County city of Tuscola after weeks of reports of ill and dead squirrels in nearby Urbana. One of the rodents had also tested positive for the disease, which is rare, but serious and can affect animals and humans. The presence of infected wildlife may indicate an increased risk of exposure in the area, the Douglas County Health Department said in a Thursday statement, echoing an announcement made by the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District 3 days earlier about local squirrel deaths. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, tularemia, sometimes colloquially called rabbit fever, is caused by a bacteria mostly found in rodents, rabbits, and hares. About 100 to 200 cases are reported every year in the country, and it naturally occurs in all states except Hawaii. Illinois reported 9 cases in 2023, behind 7 other states, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Arkansas, Colorado, and Kentucky. Pets can become infected if they come into contact with or eat an infected animal, or breathe in or ingest contaminated food or water. They can also be exposed to the disease through tick and flea bites. Pet owners should watch for signs of illness and consult a veterinarian with concerns, according to Douglas County health officials. The department also urges that cats and dogs not be allowed to roam outdoors unsupervised and to be protected from tick bites. While tularemia has not been found to spread between people, humans can catch it by being bitten by an infected tick, deer fly, or other insect. Skin contact with infected animals, eating or drinking contaminated food or water, or breathing in the bacteria during farming or landscaping activities if a tractor or mower runs over an infected animal's carcass. Health officials recommend wearing EPA-registered insect repellent and long clothing outdoors, not drinking untreated surface water, and not handling sick or dead animals unless wearing gloves. Symptoms in humans include fever, chills, muscle pain, or tenderness, and lack of energy. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, tularemia manifests in 6 main types, with different signs and symptoms depending on how the bacteria enter the body, through the skin, eyes, mouth, or lungs. Up to 80% of cases lead to skin ulcers and swollen tender glands. Effects from the other types include painful red eyes with yellow discharge, a sore throat, stomach pain, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, a dry cough, difficulty breathing, sharp chest pain, and weight loss. Because it's rare and its symptoms can be mistaken for other common illnesses, tularemia can be difficult to diagnose. The CDC recommends sharing any likely exposures with healthcare providers to help with the diagnosis. If untreated, tularemia has a human mortality rate of 5 to 15%, which can be lowered to about 1% by antibiotic treatment, according to the state health officials. Turning to some political news, we have Pritzker criticizes do-nothing Dems. Governor calls for mass protests and disruptions by Joey Cappelletti and Holly Raymer with the Associated Press. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker sharply criticized fellow Democrats on Sunday for not doing enough to oppose President Donald Trump, drawing a clear divide between himself and other high-profile Democrats seen as future presidential contenders. Pritzker delivered the keynote address at the New Hampshire Democratic Party's McIntyre-Shaheen 100 Club Dinner, the latest and most high-profile in a series of speeches this year. While Pritzker continued to attack Trump, he also focused on what he says are shortcomings in his own party, assailing Democrats for listening to, quote, a bunch of know-nothing political types, unquote, instead of everyday Americans. Without naming names, he called out Democrats, quote, flocking to podcasts and cable news shows to admonish fellow Democrats for not caring enough about the struggles of working families, close quote. Quote, those same do-nothing Democrats want to blame our losses on our defense of black people, of trans kids, of immigrants, instead of their own lack of guts and gumption, Pritzker said. The second-term governor has yet to say whether he will run for that office again in 2026, but the billionaire Hyatt heir has been laying the groundwork for a potential presidential campaign for years. Notably, California Governor Gavin Newsom, another high-profile 2028 contender, said on his podcast recently that the case of Kilmore Abrego Garcia, a Maryland man mistakenly deported to El Salvador and detained at one point in a notorious mega-prison, was a, quote, distraction from issues such as tariffs. Newsom also said on his podcast inaugural episode that he opposes trans athletes competing in women's sports. Polling suggests immigration is Trump's strongest issue and that a majority of Democrats also oppose trans participation in women's sports. Pritzker on Sunday night said it was no time for Democrats to be in despair. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption, but I am now, he said, stressing that the party must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. Pritzker has already spoken this year at the Human Rights Campaign's Los Angeles dinner and is scheduled to headline a Minnesota Democratic dinner in June. He drew national attention in February when he used part of his joint budget and State of the State address to draw a parallel between Trump's rhetoric and the rise of Nazi Germany. On Sunday, Pritzker again invoked his Jewish faith, criticizing Trump's efforts to deport foreign students who participated in pro-Palestinian demonstrations. He called on Trump to, quote, stop tearing down the Constitution in the name of my ancestors, close quote, a line that drew a standing ovation from the crowd. But Pritzker was also adamant in calling out the do-nothing Democrats, asserting that while the party may need to fix our messaging and strategy, our values are exactly where they should be. He added, we will never join so many Republicans in a special place in hell reserved for quislings and cowards. Lou D'Alessandro, who retired from the New Hampshire State Senate last year after 5 decades in public service and met Pritzker in Chicago 5 years ago, said the Illinois governor has all the ingredients to make it to the big time. He's very quick on his feet, very gregarious, he said. But any Democrat who wants to win in 2028 has their work cut out for them. They've got to reintroduce themselves to the grassroots. They've got to let people know Democrats care about them or they're going to be in big trouble, he said. Last year's featured speaker at the McIntyre-Shaheen 100 Club dinner was Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who went on to become his party's vice presidential nominee. The annual event is especially significant among state Democratic fundraisers, given New Hampshire's historic role holding the nation's first presidential primary, though Democrats last year moved South Carolina ahead at the behest of former President Joe Biden. The first 100 Club dinner was held in 1959 to promote the presidential candidacy of John F. Kennedy. In 2020, speakers included 10 Democratic candidates for president. Also from the Associated Press is Steve Peoples and Thomas Beaumont. We have Swing District Republicans Scarce. Many days over the past 2 weeks, no one answered the phone at any of U.S. Representative Scott Perry's four offices. Perry's team did not share details about the Republican congressman's public appearances until they were over. Even supporters who live in Perry's central Pennsylvania district could not remember the last time he hosted an in-person town hall. No one opened the locked door at his district office in Mechanicsburg last week when an Associated Press reporter rang the bell. A male voice said through the intercom, "I don't have any public appearance information that I can provide." The U.S. House is ending a 17-day recess, typically known as a district work period, in which members of Congress return home to focus on their constituents. But some of the most vulnerable Republicans limited their potential exposure to the potential backlash from President Donald Trump's first months in office. They are embracing the strategy outlined by GOP leaders in Washington, who argue there is no benefit to creating more viral moments, such as the crowd in Asheville, North Carolina, that booed U.S. Representative Chuck Edwards and the pointed questions about tariffs and deportations that were directed at U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Perry, who won re-election last fall by about 5,000 votes, is one of the 10 most vulnerable House Republicans, as measured by their margins of victory last fall. They were especially hard to find during the recess, though it was difficult to verify many of the public's schedules due to the inconsistent responses from their offices. None of them, a collection of swing district conservatives from across Arizona, Colorado, California, Iowa, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, hosted in-person events that were open to the public. Just one planned a telephone town hall. Others favored smaller invitation-only gatherings with local officials promoted only after they were over. The Republicans' lack of access didn't sit well with some voters. They're publicly elected officials. They ought to be accessible to the public, Republican voter Robert Barton, a 57-year-old civil engineer, said as he waited for his lunch at Italian Delight Pizzeria across the street from Perry's office in Mechanicsburg. Perry's team did not respond to requests for a comment. Veteran GOP strategist Doug Hay argued that interacting with constituents in planned and controlled ways is more productive than town halls for members of Congress, and that's smart for any politician, he said. The National Republican Congressional Committee, the House Republicans' campaign arm, is not encouraging targeted members to stay out of the public eye, a spokesperson said. Instead, the NRCC encourages lawmakers to meet with their constituents in public, but to be wary of events that could divert attention from a House member's message and agenda, according to NRCC spokesman Mark Marinella. We tell everyone, go out and meet people. You have to be in front of your constituents. Use every avenue you can. House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican from Louisiana, urged lawmakers to consider convening so-called tele-town hall meetings, dial-in conferences, where thousands can listen and lawmakers can take questions. Marionette Miller Meeks, an Iowa Republican, held no events open to all constituents, and she did not have any plan for the remainder of the break, which actually ended on Sunday. And with that, we complete the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.